This is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Wednesday, June 23rd, 2021. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster Olney, working from my home studio in New York. And Taylor, remember those days when we talk about how smoothly those checks for foreign substances were going? That was all the way back to, what, yesterday morning?
Yeah, I think it was yesterday morning. I was it was all I could think about last night as things unfolded and many pitchers were very unhappy with the new foreign substance policing.
Yeah, everything was fine. And then last night was a complete mess. In the game between the Nationals and Phillies, a lot of fireworks. Max Scherzer was checked after the first inning and again after the third by umpires. And then in the fourth inning, he came up and in to Alex Bohm on a fastball. And then on the next pitch, he struck him out. Following that, Joe Girardi, manager of the Phillies, asked the umpires to check Scherzer.
How about this? So Joe Girardi is asking the home plate umpire, Tim Timmons and Alfonso Marquez, to take a look at something. Joe must have seen something with one of the baseballs. Scherzer's looking over the dugout saying, really? But they must have seen something. So Dave Martinez is coming out.
Davey's upset.
He is upset. Look at Joe. I love it. I love it.
Well, Davey's yelling at Joe. Now, Joe's not going to...
Alfonso Marquez is saying something to Max Scherzer. The manager has a right to ask an umpire to check.
Yeah, and that's what Joe Girardi was doing right there. That call from the Phillies television network, you heard Tom McCarthy and Kruk talk about what was going on. Well, it wasn't over, because at the end of the half inning, as Max Scherzer stalked off the mound, he glared at Girardi all the way off. And then began to make gestures with his hands as if, see my hands, look at them. And then some coaches on the national side were yelling at Joe Girardi, and this is what happened.
Max Scherzer, as the inning ended, gazing over toward the Phillies dugout, didn't say anything, just looked. And then Joe Girardi came up and said, come on over, firing everybody up. And he was ejected from the ball game. That's the ejection from Tim Timmons. 40th ejection for Joe. Scherzer mad, showing his hands.
Well,
I think if you're Mad Max, you should be careful.
Well, here's the thing. Joe got upset, and you get it. He's staring him down in the dugout.
Yep, so it got ugly. And, of course, this was the main topic of conversation after the game. Here was Max Scherzer talking about getting checked by the umpires.
The only part that was really sweaty enough on me to be able to grab any type of moisture was on my hair. It wasn't a warm night tonight, so the back of my neck really wasn't that sweaty when I tried to get there. And so for me, the only body part that actually had enough sweat on it was my hair. So, that's fortunate tonight, but, I mean – this is going to be dangerous when, you're in a cold game and you have no sweat. What will we do then?
Here was Joe Girardi talking about his point of view.
I've seen Max a long time, since 2010. Obviously, he's going to be a Hall of Famer. But I've never seen him wipe his head like he was doing tonight, ever. Going like this, right? So it was suspicious for me. He did it about four or five times. It was suspicious. I didn't mean to offend anyone. I just got to do what's right for our club.
Yeah, we talked about over the weekend on Monday about how that old gentleman's agreement between managers, that is gone. Dave Martinez, the Nationals manager, talked about why he got so mad at Joe Girardi.
I thought the umpires did a good job with it. I really did. I mean, it's part of the game now, and they did that due diligence. So as far as Joe's concerned, I think he's got to answer the tough questions about that. I don't need to answer that.
Here's Dave talking about the umpires checking Max.
There was no sticky stuff. Let's just say that, the umpires checked, everything was good. So, like I said, Joe, I think Joe's got to answer the tough questions tonight.
After the Dodgers game, after Clayton Kershaw pitched, he was asked about this situation. He had an interesting suggestion.
I will say this. I say, how Girardi checked Scherzer or called him out. I think there should be a punishment if they don't catch anything on the guy, because I think the Scherzer, he's one of the best pitchers of our generation. And to see him get checked, and I think it was first and third situation or guys on base and mess up his rhythm. I think he ended up getting out of it, but you better find something if you're going to call him out like that. So maybe there should be like a punishment if a manager checks a guy and there isn't anything or something like that. But other than that, it is what it is. It's whatever.
We'll be talking with Paul Embiidis coming up about that idea. Kershaw pitched against the Padres last night. It didn't turn out well for LA. Here was a big moment in the game.
High drive, deep right field. We are still in the crowd zone. Two-run home run for Jake Cronenworth. Fast start for the Padres in game two. On top, 2-0.
Man, there's nothing more fun than a Padres game right now. There's no doubt about it. Don Arcillo on the Padres television network with that call. The Padres win this game 3-2. Meanwhile, the Giants shut out the Diamondbacks. And as of this morning, San Francisco, 21 games over 500, 47-26, 3 games ahead of the Dodgers, 4.5 ahead of San Diego. Lots of injury news yesterday for the Mets. Marcus Stroman had to leave his start with a sore hip. Michael Conforto's return to the active roster was delayed due to coronavirus concerns. And Joey Lucchesi, who they acquired from the San Diego Padres during the offseason, is out for the season. He's going to need Tommy John surgery. The Atlanta Braves placed left-hander Max Fried on the 10-day injured list Tuesday because of a blister on his left index finger. The Dodgers activated first baseman Max Muncy off the injured list on Tuesday, and they're hoping to get Cody Bellinger back today, and they're hoping that he'll be starting in center field in that series finale against the Padres. Blue Jays right-hander Alex Manoah was suspended 5 games and fined for throwing at Baltimore Orioles third baseman Michael Franco on Saturday. The Astros just keep on winning. Miles Straw pitching in yesterday.
Here comes the 3-2. McCormick takes off, and that one's hit into shallow right field. Coming in on is the right fielder, and it gets by Stewart. He dove for it and missed it. Coming home is McCormick. He's safe. Just ahead of the tag at home was McCormick, a head first slide, and the Astros lead 2-1.
Steve Sparks, Sparksy on KBME. With that call, Houston wins 3-1. Red Sox, Rays, and of course, this was the debut for Wander Franco, and he had a great night.
Had the first pitch to him. Swing and a high drive, deep to left field, on its way. His first big league hit is a game-tying 3-run homer. It's 5-5.
That was from 620 WDAE, but in extra innings, the Red Sox would prevail.
2-1, swing hard, ground ball, right side, throw for a base hit, rolling down the line into the corner, 2-run score. Long crosses the plate. And right behind him, Bogarts, a 2-run double for Rafi Devers, and the Red Sox take a 7-5 lead.
On the way to a 9-5 victory, that from Joe Castiglione, WEI 93.7 FM. Now, before we get to Melanie Newman and Dave Schoenfield and Paul Embiidis, don't forget ESPN Plus is your home for the European Championship and the Ultimate Fighter. Sign up now at ESPNplus.com to watch. And it was another wild night in the NBA. Phoenix won on a lob pass last night. It was a great finish. ESPN Podcast has full coverage all postseason long with new episodes of the Woj Pod, Jalen and Jacoby, the Hoop Collective, and the Low Post. You can find all these shows on your favorite podcast app.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes. The clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11 ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code baseball. That's code baseball. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Jumping into the numbers. This is Hembo Knows on Baseball Tonight.
Hembo, Paul Imbecchiti's a researcher for ESPN, a head honcho on the show Get Up. He's all things to Mike Greenberg, that's for sure. Let's get to what happened last night. The second day of pitcher checks didn't go nearly as smoothly. You had this big confrontation, Max Scherzer acting like a, you know, he was being arrested, throwing his hands up in the air, dropping his hat on the ground, glaring at Joe Girardi after Girardi asked him to be checked. What did you think?
I think that it would be perfectly fine if someone around baseball was willing to act like an adult. That for starters, I was totally outraged by the behavior of Joe Girardi, who's the manager of my favorite team, and Max Scherzer, who is, as you described to me in an email this morning, sort of the de facto head of the players union. For him to sort of be throwing these tantrums, for lack of a better term, I thought to be just ridiculous. Even when the umpires were checking him as he was leaving the mound after innings, he was acting sort of oddly. I don't quite understand it. I mean, it's very clear, and he made it clear after the game that he does not like this, and he sort of put the onus on Rob Manfred. But like, the pitchers took a mile after you gave them an inch. Like, this is what you deserve to have happen. It didn't really sit well with me at all the way that Max Scherzer behaved. But likewise, for Joe Girardi to be out there essentially starting a confrontation after Max Scherzer walks off the mound and has the gall to look at the Phillies dugout was likewise ridiculous. Like, I don't understand. Look, we know that Joe Girardi runs hot, but this was just a really, really bad look for baseball all the way around. Max Scherzer looks like a loser. Joe Girardi looks like a loser. Obviously, the pace of the game was totally stunted by this, which was obviously our biggest fear. So all in all, just a mess for baseball that they're going to need to rectify immediately.
I loved Clayton Kershaw's suggestion last night. Absolutely loved it. I think it's a great, it's a great tweak potentially that they could put in there. The one thing that I wonder, though, is that if they actually can, because it involves instant replay, it's something that happens on the field. I think they would have to work out something with the Players Association. And we'll get to that in a moment about how unproductive and uncollaborative this relationship is. But I loved in theory what Kershaw was suggesting, that you try to, because the point is to try to deal with foreign substances. It's not trying to give managers an opportunity to play some gamesmanship. And I really don't think, and I've known Joe long enough to know that's not him. Like, I think he legitimately was doing it because he saw Max doing something differently, running his hands through his hair. And he feels like he has to represent the interests of his team. And so he asked for it. But I do agree with Clayton that if you have a manager who says, you know what, I have seen enough, I see some evidence and I want it checked and it doesn't work out, then I think it'd be great if he lost his challenge for the rest of the game. Or let's face it, if it's the ninth inning and you did a challenge on a closer when you were down by, you know, three runs and you're just trying to mess with the other guy, then maybe you lose your challenge for the next game. I think there should be some sort of a penalty if you challenge and nothing comes of it.
Yes, someone needs to explain to me why managers have any say in this at all. I mean, right now, the reason Joe Girardi did what he did last night is because he merely could. It provided him a potential competitive advantage. So it's hard for me to fault him for just exercising the practice for which he is allowed. But we have the umpires doing this now all the time. We have the policemen at work here. We don't need the neighborhood watch coming in, right? But now that this is being enforced and being enforced so obviously and stringently, for my money, the manager should have no say in the matter whatsoever. This is at the discretion of the umpire, and I'm with you. If the managers are going to continue to have a say and can, you know, call for the umps to essentially stop the game whenever they want, there absolutely has to be a penalty for it on your end. Otherwise, we're going to see a never-ending charade of this and the kind of gamesmanship that we just absolutely don't need moving forward, and the lengthening of baseball games unnecessarily.
And to go back to, you know, what Max said after the game, you know, he basically said it's Rob Manfred's rule. And it drives me crazy, as it did last week when, you know, we heard from Gerrit Cole. I really wish that rather than talk through the media, that they would talk through each other. We have no indication that there was any collaborative, productive effort to have a discussion. And you know what? I mean, if Rob Manfred didn't pick up the phone and call Max Scherzer or call the, you know, Tony Clark and call Bruce Meyer, the head of the union, say, please, let's have a summit to deal with this. Then shame on Rob Manfred. And if Max, who is part of the executive committee and is an important voice there and he's a veteran player, if there wasn't a strong effort to engage, then they don't really have room to complain.
Mm. Well, you're exactly right.
To me, it's like someone who chooses not to vote and then complains about what what politicians are doing. You know what I mean? I'm like, I'm sorry. If you are in a position to have a conversation about how to dictate what's going to happen and to find a middle ground. And look, we've heard from Rich Hill last week, the oldest pitcher in baseball. We heard from Peter Moylan yesterday sharing that frustration that there's not any conversation. If you don't have the conversation, you don't really have room to complain.
You're exactly right. Max Scherzer here and Gerrit Cole previously, they're part of the problem. They're not part of the solution. And I think this is a microcosm of the fact that you can have a relationship between the union and the commissioner's office for which they can fundamentally disagree. You cannot have a relationship for which you fundamentally disagree and there's no respect. Right now, you don't have either. And that puts baseball in a really precarious place moving forward.
Yeah, I think the criticism be on both sides. I agree.
Absolutely.
To put this rule in midseason is far less than ideal. You hope it doesn't contribute to injuries like Tyler Glasnow got last week. And on the other side, you need to be engaged. And I just have been watching this play out over the last 6 years. I don't know how it helps the union to not engage on a consistent basis. I don't get it.
Rob Manfred finger pointing is also something you can lose me on here too. Like, it's obviously his league, and thus this is how it came to pass. But I mean, Theo Epstein was just hired in large part to help baseball move itself forward. This was a guy that was a general manager last year, Buster. This is not a bunch of people in high ivory towers that are incredibly out of touch with what's going on. And so far, the removal of foreign substances from the game have had the exact effect that we wanted. But I don't know. Like, this to me is one in which I side with the league more so than the players. But it's very clear that the dialogue between the two needs to be a lot more. It needs to at minimum exist.
Yep. You got to talk. All right. Let's talk about the Houston Astros, the best offense in baseball.
Lester, what if I told you this Astros lineup wasn't just good, but on pace to be historically good? I mean it. The 2021 Astros have a weighted runs created plus of 124, meaning their lineup collectively is 24% above the league average. Buster, only two teams in the history of the modern era have exceeded that number over a full season. Those teams were the 1927 Yankees and the 2019 Astros. So how are they this good? I'll give you three quick reasons why. One, Buster, they don't sell out for power. Houston makes contact on 79% of its swings. That leads all of baseball. Two, because they are a contact-oriented team, they don't live and die with the home run ball. In fact, they average 3.5 runs a game without the homer. That's nearly half a run more than any other team in the sport. And lastly, there are just no easy outs in this lineup, Buster. By OPS, the top third of their order ranks ninth, the middle third ranks first, and the bottom third ranks third. So no rest for the weary opposing pitchers.
No, give credit to Alex Cora, who said a month ago that he thought that the Astros had the best offense in baseball, and that's certainly being borne out. You want to talk about the Indians player development, which is really shown this year.
I'm going to make a definitive statement here, and it is this. The Cleveland Indians develop starting pitchers better than any organization in baseball, and I'm not sure it's that close. Here's what I mean. But during Terry Francona's tenure with the team, Indian starters have produced about 135 wins above replacement, according to Fangraphs. That leads all of baseball during that time. And over that span, the Indians rank 26th in payroll dollars committed to starting pitching. Buster, and this year, they're not paying a single starter even $1 million, not one. So right now they're without Shane Bieber and Aaron Savali and Zach Plesac. But you know what? Some pitcher I've never heard of is going to give them quality innings because that's just what they do.
Yeah, it really is amazing how consistently they win. I remember before the season started, and I can't remember what the over-under on them was. It was like 80 to 81 or 82. But it feels like it's like a gimme. Yeah, that's easy. They're going to go over because they have every year that Terry Francona has been the manager of the team. And even before that, they were really good at developing pitching, as you noted. All right. So the other day we were texting back and forth about Jacob deGrom. glove side dominance.
Yeah, this is a very astute observation. And boy, were you onto something, Buster. So right now, Jacob DeGrom has 117 strikeouts. 95 of them have been to his glove side, meaning inside to lefties and outside to righties. That's 81% of his strikeouts. For the season, 80% of DeGrom's pitches overall have been to his glove side. Buster, never before in recorded history has a qualified pitcher thrown even 70% of his pitches to any half of the plate. So essentially, opponents can split the plate in half against them, and they still stand no chance.
So do you agree with the comparison I did on Get Up yesterday that, you know, I said that he reminds me to a high degree of Mariano Rivera, who, as you know, would basically throw one pitch and he would throw it most of the time in the same spot. But the difference is that Mariano Rivera would get 3 to 4 outs a game. We got DeGrom throwing 5 to 7 innings per game. He's like Mariano Rivera, except times five.
What he's doing is completely absurd. And right now is actually a decent time to do this exercise. Mariano Rivera averaged somewhere between 70 and 80 innings, a year during his time as Yankees closer. That's where Jacob DeGrom is right now. And never in any season did Mariano Rivera have anything close to what Jacob DeGrom is doing right now from the perspective of run prevention and from the perspective of missing bats. I agree with you. His glove side command is ridiculous, and his ability to miss bats there, it was a good observation because he threw only 70 pitches in that game, 60 of which were on that side of the plate. If there is any knock on Jacob DeGrom this year, Buster, I suppose it's that he's not gone deep into games. He's gotten yanked a few times because of these minor injuries and such, and that's all fair. Obviously, in 1968, which is going to be the comparison, Bob Gibson was much more durable. But all in all, Jacob DeGrom right now is the greatest pitcher that ever lived, and I think the Mariano Rivera comparison is a really good one because there's no starter ever who's even come close to doing this.
Yeah, and just to be clear, when we talk about glove side versus arm side, it's from the perspective of the pitcher. In other words, glove side for DeGrom as a right-handed pitcher is down and away to right-handed hitters, inside to left-handed hitters, where on the other side, arm side, inside to right-handed hitters and away from left-handed hitters.
Thanks, and you know what's so funny? Real quick, Buster, there's one more point. John Smoltz came on Greeny's radio show yesterday and said, the thing that most impressed him about DeGrom when he first came up was his arm side command. So to go from that point to where a Hall of Fame pitcher is saying that's this guy's best quality to now having this kind of dominance to his glove side just shows you the evolution and the athleticism of Jacob DeGrom.
Absolutely. And John Smoltz is someone who well qualified to talk about athleticism and dominance. That's for sure. All right. Thank you.
Later, boys.
Get out of here, Hembo. Sick of Hembo. Right.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Melanie Newman became just the second woman ever to do play-by-play for a nationally broadcast MLB game. She joined Susan Waldman, who called nationally televised games for the Baseball Network during the 1994-95 seasons. Melanie, what was that like last night? How much fun was that?
Oh, man, Buster, it was so much fun. But any time that you're in the same sentence with Susan Waldman, I mean, that just says enough in itself. She's a legend. It's someone that I absolutely love just to have in life, not even in work, and that only gets better from there. But we didn't have any favors. The Orioles had about 2 hours of rain delays the night before, so it was a very late night, early morning drive into New Jersey to get everything set up to call from the studio. But between Yonder Alonso and Buck Showalter, and even with our Brett Dolan on sidelines, the guys are just fun. And they all have different perspectives, and I think that was the best part. We just see so many different angles of how to bring this game into people. And we had a blast with it, especially to see Texas trying to make a little bit of a comeback there in the end.
So I worked with Jessica Mendoza for a lot of years, and it was always, you know, I would be next to her when we'd be doing interviews, or I'd hear her give answers on various shows about making history. She, of course, the first woman to work on Sunday Night Baseball. And she So, you know, she would address it because she thought it was important, and she couldn't wait to change the subject too. She was like, she just wanted to move on to the time. Well, we don't need to talk about this anymore. I'm curious about how you feel like about the history that you're making.
I mean, it's pretty par for the course. I would agree with that because it's great to have a first, but it's more important that you're not the last. So I think the door opening, awesome, but you want to get it to the point where it's not a female announcer. It's just, this is an announcer. And you're able to build off of it from there. I got that most of my career in the minor leagues. I was usually the first woman for every league that I stepped into after that. But, you don't want to be seen with the kid gloves that a lot of people approach because of that reason of, you know, oh, well, she is a woman or she's the first woman. It's not, I'm a broadcaster like the rest of you. And you know, you want to just be able to run with that even pack.
Yep. I feel like I just heard from Jess right there with your answer. She had the same perspective. All right. When we have guests on the podcast for the first time, I always like to ask, who was your team growing up and who was your favorite player?
Oh man, I grew up in Atlanta, but my mom is from New England, and Carlos Pena he worked on my grandparents' farm when he was in high school. But we were diehard Boston to the core, and all my cousins in Boston even were all Chipper Jones and the '90s Braves, and how great are they? And I'm over here like Coco Crisp, and maybe they'll break the curse, and never mind, they're not gonna break the curse. So it was definitely a different experience. My dad was a military brat, so he was a big Nolan Ryan guy, just with where he was growing up in Oklahoma at the time. So it was Boston. The Rangers were a little bit of secondary there. And then, of course, we loved going to Turner Field. That was never an experience that I was going to turn down. But, you know, and that kind of paid off, I think, having a little mix of all those different teams, especially once you start to work and you realize work is kind of the same way.
Who were the broadcasters that influenced you?
The first and foremost was Bob Raflin. We actually met him adopting a dog through his wife's agency. And he was the first one who really kind of took me under his wing and said, you're a baseball person. I've seen what you've been doing in college, but you are a baseball person. And I think you need to focus on that. And it's a relationship that I've just really cherished because he's somebody who's become family to us at this point. But it was actually Jim Fife of the Auburn Tigers football network, and the way that my dad would really attach to how he called games over radio. And if we were at a game live, my dad was the guy with the headset on and listening to the call while he watched the game. And just seeing that, I think, for the first time, and how you have that ability to make emotional connections, whether it's TV or radio, and you give somebody a reason that they get excited to watch their team, no matter how the season is turning out. That was what really stuck with me. Because Buster, for the longest time, I didn't know this is what I was going to be doing. I thought I'd be a vet until we had to dissect a shark, and I backed out of that as quickly as possible. And then I thought I'd be a teacher. My mom was an educator for decades. And then she told me no, that I was not going to follow her. So I fell in love with writing, and I really thought it would be the written word and being a press journalist for a long time until I got to college. And I had an advisor who said, look, I want to switch you over from our writing major into our broadcasting major. And he knew more than I did. So I said, okay. And they did the gradual cracking a very, very shy girl out of her walnut shell.
That's really cool that you know, had an idea of what you wanted, what your passion was going to be, or, you know, early on. As you know, I mean, a lot of kids don't have that. My daughter's 21. My son is 17. And, you know, my daughter now is finding what she wants. My son is 17. He's not quite sure yet. So that's cool that you were able to do that. So last night, the game that you had, the Texas Rangers and the Oakland Athletics, in the middle of that, Sergio Romo became one of the relievers who get checked for foreign substance. And the way that he handled it, it was maybe a little bit surprising, maybe not, given his personality. But he immediately, you know, rips off his belt, drops his pants down to about his knees. And it was like, dude, what are you doing? What was your reaction when you were watching all that?
Well, first of all, it was such a surprise because they had already brought the new pitcher into the ball game. And so they said, hey, we're going to play back some Sergio Romo. So I'm thinking maybe it's the long ball. Maybe, you know, it's something that they saw that we didn't see. And we're just going along with this. Oh, okay, you know, he's a little heated. And we already seen a few who kind of thrown their cap and their glove. But then he kept going. And you, how do you not laugh in that moment of just what's going on? And we got to talk to Chris Woodward, the manager for the Rangers, beforehand. And he said, yeah, look, I think it's a little weird. I think right now people are treating it a little nonchalantly. And I don't know how this is going to go. I guess we're going to have to wait for the first person to be up in arms about it. Sure enough, it's the game that night with Sergio. But it was quite something to take in. But you knew this was going to happen at some point. I mean, especially if someone's not having their best night.
What's your read on the American League West?
Oh, man. Oakland and Houston are going to be something to watch. I mean, just in fireworks right now. And no offense, I know the Mariners have been trying to put things together lately, and things are starting to move in a more positive direction for them. And you hope that at some point, the Angels, I mean, just what they bring on paper, and it's not coming into fruition. And the Rangers, you know, they need time. And I say that as somebody's with the Orioles every day, that they need time. But Oakland and Houston are going to be huge. And I think Yonder Alonso made a really good point last night, because there was a discussion with Bob Melvin, and he said, well, you know, I don't really pay attention to that right now, and I won't until we get deeper into August or September. And Yonder said, man, he can say that, but as a player, I woke up every day and I looked to see if we had taken over the other team. He goes, that is something we are always going to be tracking, because we want the next man up. We want to come after them. I don't care if it's June or if it's September. And I'm really excited to see how that pans out, if these two can stay healthy and keep everybody active.
You mentioned your core work with the Orioles. How much fun has it been to watch Cedric Mullins, who I feel like is the best kept secret in baseball?
I mean, Buster, here's the thing. I had Jaron Duran, who's one of the better prospects for Boston, when he was in the Carolina League in 2019. And that's how I can't stop comparing Cedric Mullins in my head, was a guy no one really wanted to talk about. And he forces everybody to talk about him. I mean, what he's able to do this night, where a ball gets put in play and it's a bleeder, and there's no way anybody's getting to this. And then Mullins is underneath it immediately. And Brandon Hyde even said too, you know, the power's always been there, but it's been what he's able to do since, with really good reads, dropping the switch hitting. This kid knows his stuff, and he knows what he wants to do. And he has not had the easy road to get here either. And that's before he got sent down from the majors, ended up at AA. I mean, that's been his whole life. Look, you know this. I mean, Georgia is very competitive when it comes to amateur baseball. And that's where his fight started. And he's never, ever taken any of it for granted. And I think the thing that I love the most is the teammate Austin Hayes has said, you ask Cedric Mullins who the best hitter on our team is, and he will deadpan look at you and say, it's himself. But then he backs it up with the humility and the work ethic that just, you know, there's not any arrogance or cockiness about it. He just knows what he's putting into this game.
Yeah, you mentioned Buck Showalter, who you worked with last night. I asked Buck about him earlier this year, and he talked about the work ethic and how serious he is about his profession, and, you know, some really cool stories. All right, Melanie, thanks for doing this. Thanks for making the time.
Yeah, thanks, Buster.
Welcome to the show!
Welcome to the show.
Welcome to the show, mate.
Welcome to the show. Whoa!
Welcome to the show, baby.
You're in the show with David Schoenfield.
David Schoenfield covers baseball for ESPN. And Dave, first off, good morning to you.
Good morning, Buster. How you doing?
I'm doing well, although I was surprised your name popped up on my son's 17th birthday the other day.
Oh.
We were sitting down and we were watching the Braves and Mets game. And Jake goes, hey, who's David Schoenfield? He just wrote this piece about who should trade for who. And he's a big Braves fan, as I've established on the show many times before. And he was like, Kyle Schwarber, why would they do that? And so I ran through, and I hadn't read your piece yet. He read it before I did. And I ran through what I assumed your logic would be. I thought it was a great idea. If the Nationals wind up being sellers, I said to him, the Braves need another thumper in their lineup. And Kyle Schwarber, if the Nationals wind up trading, that would be a good addition.
Well, when I started that piece, the Nationals were struggling. And in the midst of this, they've now won 8 out of 9 and look like they're a potential playoff contender, at least in that division. So maybe the Nationals trading away some of these guys that we think they might, you know, not only Kyle Schwarber, but some other number one caliber starting pitcher. I don't know. We'll see. We got a few weeks before the Nationals have to make that decision. But yeah, the Braves, you know, without Marcell Ozuna, they do need another hitter. I know their bullpen, their rotation, some question marks, but runs are runs no matter how you get that. And Schwarber's been really tearing it up lately.
Yeah, only 38 days until the trade deadline. From talking with folks with teams across the baseball landscape, a lot of the trade talks that normally happen this time of year, they kind of been bogged down because the draft is later. That happens, yeah. I think, on July 11th, and that might be affecting some conversation. But that's definitely picking up. You see guys like, it sends ripples, like last night when Ketel Marte goes out of the Diamondbacks game with a tight hamstring because he would be a candidate to be traded. Among all the ideas that you had last in that piece, tell me the one that you like the best. You're like, this one makes the most sense.
Well, and I think this is only reinforced by Tampa Bay losing again last night with the uncertainty around Tyler Glasnow. They kind of need a starting pitcher. And my idea, out of left field, what if they go after Max Scherzer? You know, depending on how Scherzer's deferred money works, it's kind of a complicated contract. The Rays might not have to bring on, you know, a lot of salary there. And they have the prospects, number one farm system in baseball, to make that deal. They could do kind of a 5-for-1 deal like the Dodgers did a few years ago to get Manny Machado. You know, look, they can only push that bullpen so far. Give those relievers so many innings before they wear down. They really need a workhorse in that rotation, I think. And Max Scherzer is really a perfect fit for Tampa Bay.
Speaking of the Rays, Wander Franco makes his major league debut yesterday. And to quote the late, great Dennis Green, he is who he thought he is. Or paraphrase, I should say. Had a great first game. He looks like a guy who's going to have impact right away. And, I talked about the numbers that jump out to me when you look at his minor league performance that tell you a lot about how he's going to transition to the big leagues. 214 minor league games, 95 walks, and 75 strikeouts. 95 walks and 75 strikeouts, not the sort of numbers you see these days. So for me, I feel like right away he's going to have an impact. What'd you see last?
Yeah, how much fun was that? And that, you know, we've seen him in the minors. We've seen him in spring training. And he looked exactly like we thought he might be, you know, controlled aggression, I guess is how you would put it. That great elite contact ability. You know, look, Kevin Cash hit him second in the lineup. The last player younger to bat second in his debut, Andrew Jones in 1996.
Wow.
The only other two players younger since 1970 to bat second in their debut. Oh, yeah, two guys named Roberto Alomar and Ken Griffey Jr. So that tells you the Rays think this guy is going to be an impact hitter right from the get-go. And he was last night, 2-for-4. The home run, a 105-mile-an-hour double down the line. But Buster, I liked his first at-bat the most. He falls behind 0-2 and draws a walk. I mean, that's pretty impressive because your nerves, no matter how confident of a hitter he is, you know, they got to be all jumbled up, right? And he had the patience to take that walk.
And he comes right out of the Ronald Acuna Jr., Fernando Tatis Jr. school of radiating joy, huh? Yeah. I mean, like, I'm watching that last night. I'm like, put him in the home run derby.
Yeah, why not? I mean, he hits that home run. He high fives Yandy Diaz. Then he hops 8 times in the dugout. He's chest bumping and hugging everybody in the dugout. And then he gets this curtain call. You know, so already it looks like his teammates love him. Of course, the fans down there are going to love him. And I think fans across the sport are going to love this kid.
All right. Tell me what you're seeing in the Houston Astros, who, as we, you know, talk about foreign substance issues, they're flying under the radar.
Yeah. You know, when we did our power rankings, I considered putting them number one, you know, this week. They've been playing well, easily, Buster. I think you would agree the best lineup in baseball, even they're without Alex Bregman for a little bit here. They're starting rotation. Really under the radar. Zach Greinke with that 88-mile-an-hour fastball he won last night. He just keeps cruising along. You know, their only really concern is the bullpen. Ryan Pressly is solid as the closer, but, you know, I think they're going to look to upgrade there at the trade deadline. They're just a really, really good team, no doubt about it.
I'm guessing the team you had at number one, it's got to be the Giants, right? That's who I put in.
Yeah, I had them number one. I mean, at this point, do you agree that we're deep enough into the season, we have to buy into them, you know? So it's great. I love what a story, you know. It was all Dodgers, Padres. That's all we talked about in March. Here's the San Francisco Giants with the oldest lineup in the league, you know, a pretty old rotation, and they are just playing out of this world. Fun team. I'm curious to see what they'll do at the trade deadline. Buster Posey's renaissance is one of the best stories of the season. Brandon Crawford, talk about a guy flying under the radar. He's been unbelievable. Kevin Gausman, of course, has been, you know, one of the best starters. Just a great, fun story so far.
I love what Joe Girardi said about them the other day. I think it was Joe. He basically said about the Giants, whatever you try to do, they have an answer. That the lineup construction, the roster construction, when you hear words like that, it reminds you a lot of what you hear about the Tampa Bay Rays. That below, you know, names like Posey and Crawford, there's some really workable depth, usable depth for Gabe Kapler, their manager. All right, day two.
If you went through and looked at their daily lineups, you know, I bet, I don't know, how many different lineups have they had, right? 70 games or whatever, 70 different lineups probably. So, yeah, give Kapler a lot of credit for the way he mixes and matches.
Yep. Day two of the foreign substance checks, not quite the same as day one. What'd you make of all that?
Well, it's pretty funny. I'm sitting there watching the Rays game, watching Franco's debut, and then I'm getting emails from our news desk and, turn on the Phillies game. What's going on there with Joe Girardi and Max Scherzer? Well, I don't know, Buster. My question to you, is this just the beginning? You know, with Girardi checking Scherzer, you know, that photo of Scherzer at the top of the dugout with his glove and his hand and his hat raised up, like, look at me, I'm not hiding anything. Kind of an iconic photo of the 2021 season, but I wonder if this is just what we're going to start seeing, managers who are allowed to check the opposing pitcher trying to get into their heads.
Yeah, we were talking before about Clayton Kershaw's suggestion that there needs to be some demerit applied for a manager who asks for a check of an opposing pitcher and it doesn't work out well. That's going to be difficult to do. I am glad, I will say this, I am glad that the old gentleman's agreement between managers is going away. Like, that kind of didn't sit well with me the whole time that you'd hear it described, because you're like, nah, you really should, as Joe said after the game, look, I had reasons, and this is why I did it. I don't think he did it for gamesmanship. I think he had legitimate questions about, you know, Max and what he was doing, and so he represented his interests, and Dave Martinez represented the Nationals, and Max's response was completely within bounds. So I was okay with all of that.
Yeah, look, in a way, it kind of adds a little twist to the season. You know, there's nothing wrong with a little bad blood in the sport, right? Now, I had an issue maybe with Girardi's reaction, challenging Scherzer to a fight, you know, and we'll see if he maybe gets a suspension for a game or two for that. But his explanation that he's been watching Scherzer since 2010, never sees him go to his hair like that. He's doing his job. He's watching out for his team. You know, Scherzer explained why he did it. He's trying to get a little sweat to help his grip. So it all adds up, you know, whether Dave Martinez now checks somebody on the Phillies tonight, we'll see how it plays out.
You're right. I know this. We'll be watching. All right, Dave. Thank you.
All right. You bet, Buster.
Bleacher Tweets.
All righty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for a Wednesday. First up, we have Elizabeth Hart at eHart Tweets. She writes in, are managers allowed to ask for a pitcher to be checked as many times as they want? Or is there a limit? Should there be a limit? That scene with Scherzer was ridiculous, and now they are messing with pace of play.
Elizabeth, I'm curious to see what you think about Clayton Kershaw's idea. Again, I mentioned this briefly to Hembo that it's a great idea by Kershaw that there would be some sort of a penalty for a manager who challenged and then nothing came of it, which would discourage the, you know, the practice of actually challenging. But I don't know if baseball can unilaterally do that. And whether or not, you know, messing with the replay system would be something that would be subject to collective bargaining. I suspect that it would. So maybe we wouldn't be able to have that adjustment in midseason. It's a question I'm going to ask today.
Good question indeed. Let's go to Nora for 30. Norwa, sorry about the name there, guys. Do you think the umpires checking pitchers could disrupt the superstitions around not interacting with a pitcher during a no hitter?
Yep. I do. I think you could absolutely use it for gamesmanship. And as you know, I made the, you know, or gave the example of what if we get in the ninth inning and the closer comes in and the manager doesn't like what's going on in the field and he just wants to mess with the, you know, the rhythm of the game. We see that all the time.
Last one for today. Eric Sorensen at Coach Sorensen 9 writes in, how many days or games do you need of a sample size before you know if there's a big difference or not of having checked foreign substances?
I think we've seen it, and it's because we've seen the spin rates drop. And that's all you need to know. That is the primary evidence, and we're seeing it all across baseball. I'm getting text messages all the time from folks in the game noting the drop in spin rate.
Alrighty, that does it for Bleacher Tweets. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter, and please follow, rate, and review this podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts.
That's it for today. My thanks to Dave, to Melanie, to Hembo, to Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight podcast.